Pacey sat on the stile, swinging her legs and her cowslip basket. Pacey, he thought, was by far the littlest lady he'd ever seen. She had very thick, dumpy legs and black squashy button boots and a brown felt hat under which bright blue eyes roamed about like jellyfish behind large, sunshot spectacles. On her cheek, just under her right eye, was a big, furry brown mole that looked like the top of a bulrush that had been cut off and stuck there. Pacey was nice, though. He liked Pacey. "How far is it now to the cowslip field?" he said.
"Oh, step a toe further yet,"
Pacey said.
"It's not further," he said. "It's further."
"Oh, is it?"
Pacey said.
"Here, for goodness sake, catch hold of the cowslip basket and let me get down and let's get on, else we'll never be there afore bull's noon."
When Pacey jumped down from the stile, her legs sank almost to the top of her button boots in meadow grasses. She was so thick and squatty that she looked like a duck waddling to find the path across the field. In that field, the sun lay hot on sheets of buttercups. Soon, when he looked at Pacey's boots, they were dusty yellow faces with rows of funny, grinning eyes. At the end of the field rolled long white hedges of hawthorn, thick and foamy, as the breakers he had once seen at the seaside. And from a row of sharp green larches further on, he heard a cuckoo call.
"Pacey," he said, "why don't cowslips grow in this field?"
"Well, because it ain't a cowslip field," Pacey said. "Don't you know the difference between a cowslip field and a buttercup field? If you done, it's about time you did. Now, you just run on and get to the next stile and sit there quiet and wait for me."
From the next stile, he sat and watched Pacey waddling down the slope of the field between dazzling sheets of buttercups. In the wide May morning, she looked more than ever like a floundering little duck, funnier, tinier than ever.
"Pacey," he said, "will you ever grow any bigger?"
"Oh, not unless me luck changes a lot more and it's done up to yet."
"Will I grow any bigger?"
"Why, of course you will."
"Well then, why won't you?"
"Hark at that cuckoo," Pacey said.
"If it's called once this morning, it's called a thousand times."
In the next field, brown and white cows were grazing, and Pacey took his hand. All across the field there were many anthills, and Pacey let him run up and down them as if they were switchbacks, always holding his hand. Their own hands were rough and clammy and warm, and he liked them. Then somehow he knew that the next field was the cowslip field, and he suddenly broke free of Pacey's hand and ran, jumping over the last of the anthills, until he stood on a small plank bridge that went over a narrow stream where brooklime grew among bright eyes of wild forget-me-not.
"Pacey, Pacey, Pacey!" he started shouting. "Pacey!"
He knew he had never seen, in all his life, so many cowslips. They covered with their trembling orange heads all the earth between himself and the horizon. When a sudden breeze caught them, they ducked and darted very gently away from it, and then blew gently back again.
"We'll never gather them all before it's dark, Pacey," he said, "will we?"
"Oh, run and get as many as you can. It won't be dark yet a while."
Running, he tripped and fell among the cowslips. He did not bother to get to his feet, but simply knelt there in a cowslip forest, picking at the juicy stems. When he turned to look for Pacey, she too was on her knees, dumpier, squattier than ever, filling her hands with golden sheaves of flour.
"Pacey, what will we do with them all?" he said. "What will we do with them all?"
"Oh, make wine," Pacey said, "and I wouldn't be surprised if it were a drop of good."
Soon he was running to Pacey with his own sheaves of flour, putting them into the big brown basket.
"What will we do when the basket's full?"
"Oh, put them in my rats," Pacey said. "Hang them round my necks or summat."
"Like chains?"
"Oh, chains if you like," Pacey said.
Soon the basket was almost full, and Pacey kept saying it was blimmin' hot work and that she could do with a wet and a wind. From a pocket in her skirt, she took out a medicine bottle of milk and two cheesecakes, and presently he and Pacey were sitting down in the sea of cowslips, resting in the sun.
"The basket's nearly full," he said. "Shall we start making chains?"
"Oh, there'll be no peace until you do, I'll warrant."
"Shall we make one chain or two chains?"
"Oh, two," Pacey said. "I'll make a big un, and you make a little un."
As he sat there, threading the cowslip stalks one into another, making his chain, he continually looked up at Pacey, peering in her funny way through her thick jelly spectacles at her own cowslip chain.
"Pacey," he said, "what makes the sky blue?"
"Oh, you get on with your chain," Pacey said.
"Who put the sky there?"
"God did."
"How does it stay up there?"
"Oh, how the nation can I thread this here chain if you keep iffing and a-wowing all the time?"
Squinting, she peered even more closely at her cowslips, so that they were now almost at the end of her nose.
"Have you got a young man, Pacey?" he said.
"Oh," Pacey said, "dozens. Scores."
"Which one do you like best?"
"Oh, they're like plums on a tree," Pacey said. "So many, I don't know which on them to pick."
"Will you get married, Pacey?"
Pacey sucked a cowslip stalk and threaded it through another.
"Oh, they all want to marry me," Pacey said. "All on them."
"When will you?"
"This year, next year," Pacey said, "when I get enough plumstones."
"Why do you have to have plumstones?"
"Oh, just hark at that cuckoo all the time," Pacey said. "Charming us to death already. How's your chain?"
His chain was not as long as Pacey's.
"Thread two or three more on it," Pacey said. "Then we can get Baratsfield and go home to dinner."
When he looked up again from threading his last two cowslip stalks, he saw that Pacey had taken off her brown felt hat. Her uncovered hair was very dark and shining in the sun. At the back, it was coiled up into a rich, thick roll, like a heavy sausage. There seemed almost too much hair for her stumpy body, and he stared at it, amazed.
"Is that all your hair, Pacey?" he said.
"Well, it's what they dished out to me. I ain't had another issue yet."
"How long is it?" he said. "It must be very long."
"Well, pretty near down to me waist."
"Oh, Pacey," he said, "does your hair ever come down, or does it always stay up like that?"
"Oh, it comes down a time or two now and again."
"Let it come down now."
"Oh, it's time to go home to dinner," Pacey said. "We got to get back."
"Oh, please, Pacey," he said, "please. Then I can put my chain on the top of your head and it'll look like a crown."
"Oh, you'd wheedle a whelk out of its shell, you would,"
Pacey said.
"You'd wheedle round him up there."
As she spoke, she lifted her face to the blue noon sky, so that her spectacles flashed strangely, full of revolving light. A moment later, she started to unpin the sausage at the back of her head, putting the black hairpins one by one into her mouth. Then, slowly, like an unrolling blind, the massive coils of her hair fell down across her neck and shoulders and back until it reached her waist. He had never seen hair so long, or so much of it, and he stared at it with wide eyes as it uncoiled itself, black and shining against the golden cowslip field.
"That's it," Pacey said. "Have a good stare."
"Now I've got to put the crown on you," he said.
He knelt by Pacey's lap and reached up, putting his cowslip chain on the top of her head. All the time he did this, Pacey sat very still, staring towards the sun.
"Now yours," he said.
He reached up, draping Pacey's own longer necklace across her hair and shoulders. The black hair made the cowslip shine more deeply golden than before, and the flowers in turn brought out the lights in her hair.
Pacey sat so still and staring as he did all this that he could not tell what she was thinking. And suddenly, without asking, he reached up and took off her spectacles.
A strange, transformed woman he did not know, with groping blue eyes, a crown on her head and a necklace locking the dark mass of her hair, stared back at him.
"Well, now I suppose you're satisfied."
"You look very nice, Pacey," he said. You look lovely. I like you.
Well, if you're satisfied, let's get ready and start back, Pacey said. Or else I'll be blamed if we shan't miss we dinners.
Hastily, half-blindly, she started to grope with her hands towards her hair.
Oh, and put me specs back on, she said. You took them off, now put them back. How the nation do you think I can see without them?
By the time they began to walk back home, his hat was full of cowslips. Pacey's brown felt hat was full too, and the basket was brimming over with flowers. At the plank across the stream, as Pacey set down the basket and rested for a moment, he turned and looked back. Once again, as before, the cowslips seemed to stretch without a break between himself and the bright noon sky.
"There's just as many as when we came," he said. "We didn't make any difference at all, Pacey. You'd think we'd never been, wouldn't you?"
Suddenly, with a cry, Pacey seized him and picked him up, swinging him joyfully around her body and finally holding him upside down.
"Up, round and down," Pacey said. "Now what can you see?"
"London." Pacey laughed loudly, swinging him a second time and then setting him on his feet again. When he tried to stand still again, he found that the world, too, was swinging. The cowslip field was rolling like a golden sea in the sun, and there was a great trembling about Pacey's hair, her necklace, and her little crown of gold.